Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 396 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 4th of October, 2018, as I record this. And I am back from Florida, and it is a gorgeous sunny autumn in Bath. And it's just nice to walk around in the sun without sweating buckets, which is what happened in Florida. So, yes, happy to be home. But I had a great time, and today is a solo show, and I'm talking about my lessons learned from Novelists Inc. around craft, things, marketing, business, and where I might be heading next, which I've talked a bit about, but I go into it in a bit more detail. And of course, everyone's experience of conferences is different. So of course, mine would be different to anyone else's. And also, I mainly talk about the things that I shared and discussions with some of the vendors. And so I hope you enjoy that. That's coming up. So in publishing news, I am mentioning a lot of the new stuff in the bulk of the show because there were announcements from Drafter Digital. There's stuff from Apple, stuff from Kobo coming up in the bulk of the show. So that's coming. But I'm recording this the day after I recorded the bulk of the show. So what's happened today is a new press release from Publish Drive, who've launched Savant at the Digital Book World, which is an AI tool that will read your book as you upload it and suggest categories. Now, this is really interesting. So essentially, when you upload your book to publish on Publish Drive, and I use Publish Drive for Google Play and also for Dang Dang in China and a number of other stores. and of course, Kinga Gentetics was on the show episode 391 a few weeks ago. And we talked about how data analytics and how much she's into AI. And I think I just tried Savant. I re-uploaded one of my books and it did indeed find a category without me putting it in, which, you know, it was interesting because it got it correct, but that's not really something that, I mean, I already knew that category. So I think if you don't really understand where your book fits, it might be useful right now. But why I am interested more is that this is the first step. So to me, so much of this stuff, machine learning, semantic analysis, which is really analyzing the words and the emotional side, all of this stuff will only develop with more data. So I'm pretty happy to be having access to that tool and we'll look forward to other things happening. So baby steps, but I look forward to Savant by Publish Drive getting better over time. Also, a couple of other interesting things I saw in the Twitter stream about Digital Book World were around, I think Data Guy did a presentation. I can't seem to find it as I'm recording this. It's the day after Digital Book World finished, which is a very tech-focused publishing conference, and lots of really interesting tweets on the #DBW18 hashtag on Twitter. So I've just been following that and some fascinating stuff going on. But Kelly Peterson, who was tweeting, reported that I thought was interesting, that 73% of online YA or young adult sales are ebook or audiobook. That's really interesting given what I'm going to talk about with audio. And also she said, did you realize that 4.4 million Pottermore sales don't show up? Also 23% of children's audiobooks are Pottermore, and Pottermore is J.K. Rowling's company, which owns all the Harry Potter digital IP. And 63% of ebook purchases of teen and YA books are under $4.99. So I just think this is really interesting. I have always said, when people say, oh, but no famous author has self-published, I'm like, yeah, J.K. Rowling has her own company, Pottermore. And good goodness, it's got to be at least 5 years, maybe even 8 years ago when she put the Harry Potter ebooks onto Amazon through Pottermore. So you'd have to click through to Pottermore. And also she, of course, has a whole ecosystem on Pottermore. So I'm like, yeah, J.K. Rowling was one of the first indie authors. She did not license her ebooks and I think audiobooks to the publisher who has the print rights for Harry Potter. So Pottermore is an independent business. And of course, to me, an independent author is someone who is taking control of their author career and signing some deals with traditional publishers and going forward and going indie with other things. So of course, J.K. Rowling and Pottermore are independent. I mean, yeah, they really are. So anyway, I thought that was fascinating. So 73% of online YA sales are ebook or audio. I guess, yeah, online YA sales. Interesting. I think next week there will be a whole load of roundups posted for Digital Book World. So I will report back on those because I'm interested. I didn't go to that conference. Although in my personal news, my personal update is that I just won an award at Digital Book World. I wasn't there, but Orna Ross was there to pick up my trophy. I won Publishing Commentator of the Year 2018. So that's quite cool. So yeah, I guess my comments on the show are appreciated in some form. And thanks to obviously Digital Book World for that award. I really appreciate it. And in terms of a personal update, in terms of writing, yes, I haven't done any writing for 2 weeks, but that's because I miraculously was able to schedule my time so that I finished my draft before I went away. Now I've just got back all my notes and final, you know, proofreading stuff on Valley of Dry Bones, and I will be getting an arc out to my pen friends soon, so I'll start getting the early reviews sorted. Also, as I think I mentioned last time, I've kind of lost track of what I've said to who and when, but I've been doing promotion on End of Days. You might have seen it on ads. But basically, End of Days just hit multiple bestseller lists through BookBub, and also I've been doing pay-per-click ads on BookBub as well as Facebook and also Amazon. So, and again, I've managed to be organized enough to put a pre-order link in the back of End of Days for Valley of Dry Bones. And I didn't specifically say it was a pre-order link, I just put a link. So even if people buy that and then it's actually live, it will go through to each book on each store. So I'm pretty happy about that. And yeah, it is interesting. I really feel that I have been doing a lot more of the pay-per-click BookBub ads. And it's funny because you're going to hear in the main segment how much I dislike paid ads, but the BookBub ads are interesting on the other stores. So I've actually really started to see some movement on Google Play because of being able to use BookBub ads for Google Play. So again, one of my messages in this, in this show today is all the opportunities for publishing wide. And, you know, even something like paid ads, it doesn't need to be Amazon only. There are plenty of ways. And Kobo as well, of moving some books on Kobo with paid ads, also Apple Books. So, you know, you can use many of these tools on the various different stores. So anyway, this week I will be focusing on getting the final updates done, the print book formatting sorted, you know, all the little things that you have to do before the book is launched on the 23rd of October. So in useful stuff today, are you getting ready for NaNoWriMo? And if you don't know about NaNoWriMo, it's National Novel Writing Month. And NaNoWriMo kickstarted my own fiction career back in 2009 when I did my first NaNo. And in fact, my only NaNo, because since then, I've just been writing books and have never quite managed to time it. So I'm starting in November. I mean, maybe this year, you never know. But anyway, The Healthy Writer, which of course I've talked about on the show, which I co-wrote with Dr. Ewan Lawson, is part of a limited time story bundle for writers at storybundle.com/NaNo, NaNo. So basically in this bundle, you have lots of nuts and bolts stuff on writing, including how to write a novel, story pitch, the how to structure workbook for series, writing as a team sport on collaboration, and how to polish your manuscript. script into a rock-solid book. There are also motivational titles like Pulp Speed for the Professional Writer and How to Write a Novel in 10 Days by Dean Wesley Smith, and who does it quite regularly. And also, You Must Write Success Through Heinlein's Rules. So those are the inspirational, motivational. And then we have also career advice with The Secrets of Success by Christine Catherine Rush, Become a Successful Indie Author by Craig Martell, who many of you will know from the 20 Books to 50K group, and of course, The Healthy Writer. And there are lots of books in this bundle. I haven't mentioned them all or all the authors, but essentially this is a super duper bundle that you, even if you're not doing Nano, this is super excellent. So go and check that out. The bundle is a limited time bundle. It runs until the end of NaNoWriMo. And I will talk about this probably, you know, once or twice more in the coming month. But basically, you can go get it right now and you decide what price you want to pay. It's one of those pay what you want deals, and you can get all of those books. And you can find it at storybundle.com/nano, NaNo. Right. Okay. Thank you for all your emails and tweets. And because I've been gone a couple of weeks, there are so many. So I'm just going to pick a couple of the emails and tweets. But as ever, I love getting them. You make me so happy. I seriously really enjoy them. So even if I don't respond to you on the show, I generally respond to you on Twitter or comments or email or whatever. So yeah, it's really nice to interact with you guys. I don't feel so alone. So basically, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen. You can email joanna@thecreativepen.com, or you can put a comment on the show notes. So Helen Wilkie says, listening to the podcast while getting ready for the opening gala of Bloody Scotland. Now, that was from a couple of weeks ago. If you haven't heard of Bloody Scotland, it's a fantastic crime writers festival in Scotland. And they have this amazing opening ceremony where they walk through the city carrying sort of flaming torches in the dark and wearing cloaks, and it's all very gothic. It's super gothic, but lots of authors, and I haven't been to that, but I definitely want to go at some point. Kim Briggs says the show with Dave Chesson, one of the best podcast episodes I've ever listened to it twice, planning to hit it up for a third go tonight. As someone planning on launching several pen names in the next 2 months with multiple books, I found the episode useful. Fantastic. So glad. Oh, thanks to Mark in Spain, who recommended melatonin for jet lag. And Mark, I tried to email you, but the email you put on the form thing didn't work. But basically, Mark mentioned, and probably all you Americans know this already, but basically melatonin in pill form is not available in the UK and in fact many other countries. But in America, you can just get it in the health food section of Walgreens. So Mark, because of your email, and I was in Florida and I suffer from really bad jet lag usually, I went to Walgreens last week before the sun came up because it was so hot in Florida, and I bought a stack of melatonin. And I've been using it, and I must say it's magic. So thank you, Mark. You've saved me years of jet lag pain. I love you. What's so funny is, of course, I've heard about people using melatonin for jet lag, but because you can't buy it in the UK over the counter, I was just like, oh, must be, you know, dodgy. But seriously, you just go in America, it's just in the normal section in Walgreens next to like St. John's Wort and stuff like that. Okay. Anyway, and of course, this is not a health podcast. I am not a doctor. I am not recommending you use melatonin for anything. Just to make sure you get that. I was just mentioning it because it's, I'm like really happy about it. Erica Braddock. Oh, and this is a lovely one. We're still getting messages about the episode on depression with Michael Brent Collings. C. Braddock says, a lot of it hitting so close to home, almost crying, but also a relief to hear about not having to be perfect and that watching a movie is writing too. Absolutely. And in terms of watching a movie, I watched Avengers Infinity War on the plane to Florida. And I'm not going to give you any spoilers, but if you've seen that movie, you will agree with me that the ending just kind of makes you go, what? So yes, watching a movie is writing, because it really makes you think about how to satisfy your audience or not, as the case may be. And then finally, so many lovely, oh, thanks to Daniel Sewell, who sent lovely pictures from Oslo, where he's listening to the podcast and also playing with dictation. And then finally, Claudie Mashundu with the Amber Ray podcast. I cannot tell both of you how much I loved and needed to listen to this right now. It was a powerful episode, and I'm sure I'll return to it often. Lots of people loving Amber Ray. She really is very cool. I like her a lot. Okay, so today's show is actually sponsored by everyone supporting the show on Patreon, because there has been a bumper crop of new patrons over the last few weeks. And also, I wanted to just revisit just how incredibly important the Patreon is for me. You know, coming up to 10 years of the podcast, and I've thought about giving up a number of times, and people keep telling me that it's worth continuing. And the Patreon, even if you're just giving like a couple of dollars a month, it makes a huge difference, not just from the financial side, but also from the psychological side. I think patronage is one of the most powerful things that you can do to support creators that you want to continue hearing from. It's one of those ways that you can support people and encourage them to do the things that are either useful to you, or also just putting good stuff in the world. And yeah, so thank you so much to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Thanks to long-term supporters, and there are so many of you now who've been supporting the show on Patreon for a couple of years. You guys are rock stars. And thank you to all the new patrons over the last few weeks. Michelle Connolly, Ken Lyons, Leanne Beckett, Chris Bardell, Ingrid K.V. Hardy, Jen Story, Darcy Alice House, Linda Sterling, Barb Reimer, Nell Godin, Hildy McQueen, and to Felicia for increasing her pledge. And as I said, thank you so much to everyone who is now supporting the show on Patreon. I like the tweets and emails. It demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And you can support the show with just a couple of dollars per month, less than a coffee a month, or a couple of coffees if you're feeling generous. And you will get the extra monthly Q&A audio and lots of backlist audio as well. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, let's get into the mega solo show. So this is a solo show, and I'm titling it Doubling Down on What You Love and Opportunities When Publishing Wide. And this is, of course, my roundup from the NINC conference, or Novelists Inc., if you hadn't heard of that before. So just as a sort of high level as to what we're getting into, write what you love and don't feel guilty about it. Market in a way that you love and don't feel guilty about it. Publishing wide is a way of life and only getting better. Plus, what if the future is audio first? So those are the topics that I'm going to be covering in this podcast today. So first of all, just to say that the Novelists Inc. conference, it's a professional organization, and the conference is for members only. So a couple of people are like, oh, wow, I've never heard of that conference. And I'm like, well, that's probably because it's a private conference for members. And as a speaker, I went as a speaker, and you weren't even allowed in some of the sessions when you were just a speaker. So it's a professional organization. So you know that the people who are there are generally multi-published, many over many years. So there were people I met who had published, you know, over 50 books, some over 200 books. So, you know, essentially a more mature audience. You never had to sort of talk about what happens when you put your first book into the world. The level of conversation was very much around business. It was around making a living. Most of the people there would have been full-time writers in some form or another. So it was very challenging for me to be amongst such a mature audience in that way, as in mature in the indie space. And the NINC writers, many of them, obviously, when you've been publishing as long as they have, most of them have come out of traditional publishing. many of them are getting their backlists back and are indie. Sort of many of them have gone indie by choice now after years in traditional. So really very interesting audience to be amongst and a fascinating conference. I spoke on content marketing for fiction and also how to grow your book sales internationally. So two topics. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do with those talks. I might record them. I might podcast them at some point. I will let you know. But I spoke on those two topics. Oh, the other thing I wanted to shout out before I get into the topics was the Dali Museum. If you do go to Tampa or St. Petersburg in Florida, go to the Dali Museum. I was stunned, actually, at the level of number of paintings they have and just the huge amount of Dali work they have there. I'm used to seeing Dali in Europe, obviously. I was beyond surprised to be in Florida and visit a world-class Dali Museum. So if you are in St. Petersburg or you go to Nink or you're in Tampa, because it's only about half an hour from Tampa Bay, I highly recommend the Dali Museum. Okay, so I do have pages and pages of notes and lots of to-do stuff and things I'm still thinking about. But because I wanted to get this podcast out now, I'm just going to share some of the big things that really hit home for me and stuff that I'm ready to share right now. So first of all, number one, write what you love and don't feel guilty about it. So Dr. Jennifer Barnes taught two sessions, which really had a big impact on me. She is a fantastic speaker, very charismatic. She's also super smart. She's a tenured professor. She's also a YA author and just brilliant. Fantastic. If you get a chance to hear Dr. Jennifer Barnes, then absolutely do that. So she talked about, she's actually writing a book about the topics she talked about, which are around the id list, which I'll come back to in a minute. And so I'm hoping to have her on the podcast at some point. I did meet her and say hi, and hopefully I would love to talk to her about this again. But essentially, she talked about fiction being a pleasure technology. And when I talk about pleasure in this, please just forget the sex side. I mean, sex, of course, is one pleasure, but this was a much bigger topic. And her point is fiction is a pleasure technology, so our stories should be full of what we love as readers. And she talked about the difference between hardwired pleasures and idiosyncratic pleasures. So first of all, hardwired pleasures we have as humans include touch. Now, of course, there can be sexual touch, but there's also most humans need other forms of touch. So there's obviously parent-child touch, sibling touch, friendship touch. The level of empathy and connection we have as humans, even just, you know, touching someone's arm when you're talking with them, hugging your friend. So touch is a hardwired pleasure into humans. Then the other things she covered were beauty, wealth, status and power, competition, gossip, and danger. So these are all things that as humans, we are hardwired to want. And, you know, books that are full of these things will be popular. And book titles and book covers that indicate these aspects will sell. And Jen, as I said, she's a professor, and she essentially looks at why different books sell well. And it's so, she's a psychology professor. I just found this topic amazingly fascinating. I do have a postgrad diploma in psychology and I specialized in psychology of religion. So I am very interested in psychology. In fact, Morgan Sierra, my protagonist in my Arcane series, is a psychologist. So I guess I'm naturally more interested in the psychology of things, but this really just, the penny dropped for me on this. So anyway, examples of these hardwired pleasures are things like Game of Thrones, which is competition of power, Pretty Little Liars, which is beauty and gossip or reputation, and Crazy Rich Asians, which is obviously about wealth and also that gossip and probably status as well. So when you think about the films, the books, the things that resonate with us, these hardwired pleasures are hugely important. And then, and this was just so refreshing to hear, there are these idiosyncratic pleasures that we each find irresistible in books. And idiosyncratic is just like the things that are individual for us. And the id list that Jen talked about is the id pleasure principle in Freud's psychology, but also, I guess, short for idiosyncratic. So the things that you find irresistible. So for me, and this is why, of course, Dan Brown made such a difference to me and Umberto Eco in The Name of the Rose. For some reason, for me, if your book has a Catholic priest or a monk, actually, I'm thinking back now, I think it's The Thornbirds, The Thornbirds by Colleen McCulloch. Those, many of you will remember, if you're in your 40s, and 50s, you will probably remember that mini series. I think it came about at a point in my life when, priests, definitely, and hooded monks on covers. Obviously, this is why the Da Vinci Code sold me. I also go for religious objects and relics, any title that includes religious kind of words, relics, ancient manuscripts. I am such a sucker for ancient manuscripts. Angels and demons. Again, Dan Brown got me there. Thunderstorms. I have thunderstorms in pretty much all my books, and that's actually what I listen to when I write. So that might have something to do with it. Also bones. I have bones and skulls and all of that type of thing, and catacombs. So for me, these are the things that I, as a reader, these are idiosyncratic pleasures, as in I want more of those things. And in my books, they feature heavily. And what's so interesting is this, my latest, this is why this session made such a difference to me. I was like, oh, Valley of Dry Bones. One, I've got bones in my title again, and I already have Crypt of Bone, which was my second novel in the Arcane series. I've got catacombs in this. I've got Catholic monks who get killed. I've got basically religious objects and relics. I put relics in so many books. I've got ancient manuscripts, all the thing, and I've got a thunderstorm, several thunderstorms actually. And what's so funny is I've been thinking, oh goodness, I've put those in books before. Is this okay? I need to be original. I need to think of new stuff. And then what Jen said was, stop trying to overthink your writing and stop trying to be original every time. Stop editing out things you love because you might have done it before. In fact, readers love the same stuff that you put in your books, and they often want to repeat the same experience. So if you're someone who really enjoys having kind of, you know, priests and monks, whether they're evil or good, and I have good and evil priests and monks and nuns, you know, if you like religious objects and relics and angels and demons and stuff, then cool, you're going to enjoy my books. So as a reader, that's what I love. I don't know why as a writer, I try and think, oh, well, maybe I should just do something different now. Because it's what I really love. So that just helped me so, so much. And as I said, I hope I've communicated how big that was. In fact, I saw Ricardo Fayette from Reezy and Mark Lefebvre straight off from ex-Covo and now out there on his own after the session. And they said, wow, you look like you've had a religious conversion experience. And I was like, I think I have. Because what Jen says is you should make this list. You should make your own id list. You should make the list of all the things that attract you as a reader and all the things that keep coming up in your writing. And then if you're bored, if you're like, oh, I'm writing this scene and it's boring to me, then go to your list and spice it up by including one of your things. So for example, you know, maybe you're, for me, a character needs to get from A to B. Well, if I put the character in a thunderstorm getting from A to B, maybe that would be much cooler. Or just throw a demon in it. Which is actually something I have ended up doing, or throw an angel in it. So for example, One Day in New York was boring me. So I switched out my relic and it ended up being the relic of an angel, which is actually quite an original relic. So, you know, these are the things you can use your id list for ideas, but also for spicing up your writing and also in your marketing. And on the blog post that goes with this episode, I've got an example of an Instagram post where I have used id list marketing. So basically I did, and thank you to the wonderful Sasha Black for a photographing end of days, which I've put on Instagram. And again, it's all on the blog post show notes for this. But my ad for End of Day says, if you like ancient sarcophagi, buried tombs, serpents and snakes, global adventure and fast-paced conspiracy thriller, you might enjoy End of Days. So instead of my older ads where I was kind of writing more about the plot. This is going straight for the id list. And what's so fascinating is I've also been doing ads because there is a snake on the front of End of Days, and the book is very much a snake book, a serpent book. And I love snakes. They're like my totem animal. but, you know, many people don't. So this is definitely one of those books that people will like or not. And so I've been doing advertising around serpents and snakes. Really fascinating area. So I wanted to share that as number one, because for my writing craft and my ad copy, that is gold. That is super, super gold. And I know that many people who listened to Jen Barnes were just blown away by her writing. And for me, that is worth so much. That is just wonderful. I love her. And so I really hope she does come on the podcast next year. And yeah, that would be cool. So that's the first thing. Number two, market in a way that you love and don't feel guilty about it. So it's so interesting when you present to a new audience, because when you know, I've been doing speaking a long time now, like 10 years I've been doing speaking professionally, and you very much get to feel the energy in a room. And this session, my first talk was on content marketing for long-term fiction sales. And the energy I felt from that audience was phenomenal. It felt like the right topic, and it felt like it was landing at exactly the right time. And the feedback I got from that talk was very much that it was. And I tell you why I think this is true. This is quite a different talk. So I was, obviously I was sharing the conference with great speakers like Mark Dawson on paid ads, David Gotkern on paid ads, and a whole load of other people talking about paid ads. And of course, paid ads are an important part of the author marketing schedule these days. But what my whole slant was that if you do not enjoy paid ads and they're not working for you, then why don't you focus on what you love and incorporate marketing as part of your creative life rather than forcing yourself into things you don't like? And I had so many people come up to me afterwards and say, thank you for saying this, because they've really just been losing the joy in their writer's life in that they just are hating it. And it's so interesting, because I also don't have the personality type to be good at ads. And it seems like many of you out there feel the same way. So I really don't do spreadsheets. I mean, I'm very, very good with managing my money and my business, but I don't need to do spreadsheets. And when I'm in my creative kind of phase, well, I just like being creative. This to me is creative. And this is content marketing. So essentially, I was talking about, you know, if you're someone who, you know, if the idea of split testing makes you keel over with boredom, or if you don't just want to keep throwing money at someone else's website, how can you do content marketing for fiction? So the Content Marketing Institute defines content marketing as creating and distributing valuable, relevant, and consistent content to attract and retain a clearly defined audience and ultimately to drive profitable customer action. And it was really good to prepare this talk for me, because and I will be announcing at some point what my new plan is, but content marketing for fiction absolutely can be done. It's just a case of following these rules, and most people don't follow these rules for fiction. So this podcast, for example, seems to be valuable, relevant, and consistent content, which actually does attract and retain a clearly defined audience and does drive profitable customer action, because I make a living and my podcast is more and more, you know, a big chunk of my income. And thank you to all of you for supporting me and also clicking through to our sponsors, and for all you patrons out there. I mean, this is the thing, content, and I guess, you know, I try to make the point that content to me is inherently rewarding. I can be useful and hopefully inspirational to you guys. I can do this and feel like this is part of my body of work. I can give you something that might help you in your journey. And so this is not just marketing in inverted commas. This is not something that I pay for and then disappears within seconds on someone else's platform, like Amazon ads or Facebook ads, or whatever, which disappear so fast. The half-life on ads is just crazy. Whereas I can put this out in the world and someone could listen to this in several years' time and still find it useful. And that's what's so interesting with podcasting, is people will go and listen to the whole backlist. So you can build a body of work through content marketing and change people's lives through articles, videos, podcasts, without the consumer ever buying a book. So to me, the idea of creating content that is both inherently rewarding, so you enjoy the process, I enjoy the time I spend podcasting and talking to other authors, also useful, inspirational, and can make money, that to me is just, it's just gold. And I've built this business in the last 10 years on content marketing, and I am intending to do it again for fiction. But it takes a lot of thought. It takes, you know, organizing and understanding some principles, which again, I'm not going to go into all this now, but I think to me, building another asset, so a website, a podcast, an asset that builds your brand over the long term, is better than building someone else's brand through paid ads. And to me, the idea of the independent author is a creative who is free from the demands of being tied to one particular publisher. And a business based around content marketing can also give you other streams of income, which, as I've talked about, is critical for creatives, and also help you sell books globally and through wide distribution. And this is so key. If you want to sell books globally and wide, you need to have avenues that can help you get your brand out into the world. And for me, the only way to stand out in this ever-growing market is to build a quality brand that readers are dedicated to for the long term. And I heard a few things that were very interesting at Nink. I heard that some author collectives are now doing a book a day. Yes, a book a day is now happening. So what's so interesting is this has been getting faster and faster. It used to be, oh, you know, if you put out a book within the 90-day period on Amazon, so that's every 3 months, so 4 books a year, then that will keep you up, you know, you're ranking up or whatever. Then it was, oh yeah, book a month. You need to do a book a month or a short story a month or something to kind of tick the algorithms. And now I've heard, and this is not just one author collective, this is a number of author collectives now doing a book a day under a certain brand. And that to me is just, yeah, I'm sure many of you listening are now going, what the? You know, that is just crazy. So I came away thinking, quite radically, I think. You know, you guys know that I am often, I often see ahead. I said to someone at the, I think it was Ernest Dempsey. Hi, Ernest, if you're listening, who's a fantastic archaeological thriller writer. I said, I think sometimes I'm like the Cassandra of the indie movement. Cassandra was the prophetess before of Troy. She often saw doom and gloom. I think I see the glass half full, but I also see things changing. And so I came away with this. You cannot compete on speed of publishing, as author collectives are now doing a book a day. And as I've mentioned before, with AI translation, with AI creation of books, with you know, more and more people coming into indie, more and more publishers, there is more and more content. So I personally, maybe you can compete on this, but I cannot. So I came out going, I cannot compete on speed. I cannot compete on price, because Kindle Unlimited books are free and I am a wide author and I don't want to compete on price either. It's a race to the bottom. So I can only compete on being me. And you can only compete on being you. And so I urge you to return to the interview on branding that I did with Christine Catherine Rush a couple of months ago, when we talked about this, about your author voice. So your brand really is dependent on author voice, how readers resonate with your stories, and also the other things you can bring them. And that is the key, I think, for content marketing for fiction. And as I mentioned, I'm not going to go into the details. I do have a whole presentation on it, and it's something I'm also really going to be focusing on in 2019 for my own fiction brand. And so more on that to come. But really, I just came away thinking I have to do things differently, because I'm not the personality type who can compete on paid ads either. And I am not putting the amount of money in that some people are. So how can I build something over the next 10 years so that my fiction brand is as well established and making me good amounts of money as my nonfiction brand does now? So those are just some thoughts on marketing in the way that you love. You have to find something that's sustainable for you. You can't just do things because you're told you should do this, you have to do this. And just so you know, I, of course, do paid ads right now as we speak. In fact, I just shared a screen print on Twitter. End of Days had a book bub this morning as I record this, and I have a screen print of End of Days next to, like, number one in a category with Jack Reacher, a Lee Child book second, and The President Is Missing by James Patterson and Bill Clinton at number three. And that is a hell of a good screenshot. So End of Days is a bestseller. It's number one on Kobo as well. It's, you know, there are lots of promotional things I do with ads for launches, but this particular promotional push and I've done BookBub ads, and also pay-per-click BookBub. I've done Facebook ads. I'm doing all the ads. I do Amazon ads. But my point is that, to me, we need to step away from the things that don't bring us joy. And I will be pulling all my ads next week because I do these short-term ad things and then stop. That's just how I roll. Okay, so I hope that was useful. Number three, publishing wide is a way of life and it's only getting better. So this was an interesting thing, and I actually had quite a few heated conversations with people at NINC around the KU versus wide dichotomy. And I do feel like it is a dichotomy. It's so funny because about 3-4 years ago, there was very much the dichotomy was on traditional publishing versus indie. Now, of course, so many traditionally published authors are now also indie that is not the dichotomy anymore. It now is KU versus wide. And people can get quite passionate about these things. So, you guys listen to me, you know I'm wide. I said to a few people, I have no issue with authors going in KU. I have no issue with individuals. I have an issue with the future, the way the future looks if everyone makes the same decision. So, you know, a lot of individual choices make up for a movement, basically. But the point is that I came away feeling like it's a bigger thing. And I hung out with a lot of the wide vendors, Drafter Digital, Kobo, I'll come on to Apple, you know, I basically hung out with Team Wide. but essentially, to me, publishing wide, as in not exclusive with KDP Select, it's an attitude, it's an ethos, and it's a way of life. It's not actually a choice for 90 days at a time. It's actually a lot bigger than that. So some people said, oh, but I'm in KU, but I can come out every 90 days. And the point is that most people who do that don't come out again. They only come out again when things begin to drop. So they're like, oh, I guess, you know, things are coming, dropping down now. So I'm going to go wide, as if that is going to replace the income within the next 90 days. But the fact is, it is harder to sell wide. And many of those people go straight back into KU. They were like, oh, it didn't work, I'm going back. Because it is harder. The point is, it takes consistent time over years to build an audience wide. You are not going to leave KU and get the same return in the following month. But the amazing, incredible point of being wide is it gives you stability and income from multiple streams. It diversifies your platform and your audience, and it makes sure that you won't be wiped out by one company changing the rules or the sheer volume of other authors publishing in said platform and drowning your books. And I have heard from so many people, that things have definitely changed. Well, the point is that if you build up income on the other platforms, to me, the income on the other platforms is remarkably consistent. It is not dependent on more authors publishing in my niche, for example. So if you choose wide as an ethos, you're choosing to be in the publishing business for the long term, and you're taking your books seriously as intellectual property assets. And you care about your books reaching people outside the Amazon ecosystem, because of course, to reach readers on these other platforms, you have to be there. And you also have to want more than just digital sales in the USA. You have to think bigger than the 90-day cliff and today's ranking. You have to be serious about your career as a writer for the long term. And that's the truth. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, well, I can't possibly come out because my income will drop. Yeah, it will drop now, but then you can build it up over the long term. And I've obviously been an advocate for wide since the beginning, partly because I guess I've always been international and, you know, I'm not an American. You might have noticed, but also because I'm committed to independence. I, as I've mentioned before, but if you haven't heard, back in 2008, 10 years ago now, I got laid off along with many people in the global financial crisis. And on that day, when I was just handed a letter that said bye-bye, essentially, I lost my income stream. That was it. That was my one income stream, and I lost it. And I swore I would never do that again. I would never give one company the power to take away my income. And also, because when you have multiple streams of income, you are less dependent. So right now, Amazon, total Amazon companies, so CreateSpace and everything else, I should say that's gone now, Audible, all the rest, are 11% of my total company income. So, because someone said to me, oh, if Amazon went away, I would have nothing. And I'm like, well, you have to change things over time. So a few years ago, probably 4 or 5 years ago, when the Hachette stuff went on, and the press was reporting that something like 60 or 70% of Hachette's income came through Amazon. And at the time, about that was mine as well. And I was like, yeah, I can see why they're in contract dispute, because one company has all the power. So at that point, I was like, okay, I really need to switch this up. I'm an independent. I need to make sure I'm not dependent on one company. So of course, I have dabbled in KU with Penny Appleton, the sweet romance author I did with my mum, because I literally had no bandwidth to manage the amount of marketing that I would need to do. Plus, it's much better to have more than three books if you're going to go wide. So of course, I still do say, look, if you're just starting out, if you're an author with one book or two books or even three books, then yeah, sure, I think KU is fine. The question is, do you want to do that brand for the long term? And as it turned out, Penny Appleton has not lasted past three books. So I am taking those books wide. I may even narrate the audiobooks. But essentially, I've dabbled in it. I have no issue with it. Some authors now are very smart. They're getting around this by using Patreon to release their books to a wide audience and then putting the books in KU later. But the interesting thing is that you have to build up loyalty, not just with readers, but also with those platforms. And, you know, it was so good to hang out with a whole load of the wide vendors, because we believe the same thing. We just like fundamentally believe that the future is better with a thriving market where there are more choices, both for consumers, but also for creatives. So I guess that's why I'm Yeah, I feel pretty passionate about it. Hope you can hear that in my voice. But the thing is, what's interesting is if you are publishing wide or if you're considering it, and maybe I'm kind of helping you in that direction, things are getting better every year. And several exciting things came out of Nink. So first of all, Draft Digital, sponsor of the show and awesome company. Also, I'm sure it's okay to announce because it just came through on a release. The lovely Mark Lefebvre, who I mentioned, who was at Kobo, has now joined Drafter Digital. So they also have, it's a great team, really super. They talked about tips for audio, about reaching libraries. And of course, if you are in KU, you don't reach libraries. And many of us had our lives changed growing up as young readers in libraries. And I certainly love libraries. They also talked about books to read. So books2read.com and the universal book links. So very interestingly, I knew about universal book links, but I hadn't been using them. On my author websites, I have, lots of individual store links, but the universal book links enables you to put one link on advertising, and when readers click through, they can pick the store they want to shop on, and you can add your affiliate link. So it's really, really fantastic. You do not need to publish on Drafter Digital to use this tool, so it's really super useful. So go to and you can check it out with one of my examples. Books to read, so books2read.com/valley, V-A-L-L-E-Y, and you're going to see all the links for Valley of Dry Bones on all the different stores. So books2read.com/valley. Now, you can basically fill in all of your universal book links and then see what I did on Instagram when I did that ad that I mentioned. I've also done them for End of Days. I was able to use the universal book link in my Instagram bio so that people could go and order the book. So, and I've also included it on, it just makes it easier to use one link rather than all these loads and loads of links, and they are wide. And I've asked the guys, and I ask again in public, guys, that I would like audiobook links on that as well. I think universal book links should include audio, and I will come back to this. But the other thing, so Drafter Digital also announced shared universe functionality, so which is also offered by Bundle Rabbit. Of course, Chuck Heinzelman was on the show last year talking about the collaboration payment engine, which is something that many authors need. So the shared universe functionality enables authors to open up their worlds and includes automatic payment splitting. So it's fascinating to me that the payment splitting stuff that I talked to Chuck about 2 years ago now in Oregon is now something that is coming up in a more mainstream way, I guess. So shared universe functionality, I think it's in beta, but it will be out soon. Drafter Digital also announced print, which just makes me laugh so much that Indies were the forefront of ebooks and digital, really, and some of the stuff we've done around ebooks has really radically changed stuff. And now everyone's moving into print, which is kind of backwards, which is kind of funny. But Drafter Digital will enable print distribution, primarily in the US. Of course, I use Ingram Spark, who I think are fantastic. But Drafter Digital will be working with the Independent Publishers Guild in America. And this will integrate into their formatting and layout templates that a lot of authors are using right now. So that's another thing that kind of happened at Nink. A lot of people were asking me about the large print stuff, which of course I've advised everyone to tell Vellum that you want large print. And more and more authors moving into taking print very seriously, doing hardbacks, doing, you know, a lot of people asking about that mass market format, which I remember Christine Catherine Rush talking about in Oregon last year. And I'm like, what? It's because we don't have that format in Britain. But a lot of Americans asking about that. So really interesting to discuss what that will mean for print. Definitely the rise in Amazon ads around print first, which of course I discussed with children's author Karen Inglis on the podcast recently, which was interesting too. So I think, again, the Drafter Digital print, the focus on print by a number of vendors, I do foresee market share being carved away from traditional publishing in the print sphere, which ebooks have definitely, we've carved out our own space. I think the same is going to happen in print, especially if Barnes & Noble continues to lose focus. And in fact, just today, reading the Financial Times, it looks like there are other discussions around companies buying Barnes & Noble. So that will be interesting. Drafter Digital also have a partnership with Findaway Voices. And I loved hanging out with the guys from Findaway because we really just connected on this audio level, which I will talk about again in a minute. So Findaway Voices enable authors to set audio prices and sell direct. And their front page, their big banner headline is "Take Back Your Freedom." And I was like, oh, I love you. Anyone who kind of goes on the freedom tack, I think is incredible. Freedom is my core value. So that is, they got me. But basically, they allow authors to publish with no exclusivity to 170 plus markets worldwide. And Findaway has been in audio for 25 years, and now they've moved into Findaway Voices, helping independents. They distribute to Apple, Google, other large markets, and library borrowing for audiobooks is also growing. I think library borrowing for audio is fascinating. They also have the Authors Direct app, which will help you sell audio direct. And they allow you to control your pricing, unlike Audible, which has no creator control. So I had some really good discussions with them, and we were talking about the use of short fiction as both marketing and potentially income. Now, I've talked about the fact that I'm getting into going to do my own fiction, and I'm starting with short fiction because, you know, I've built up an audience with voice for almost 10 years for my nonfiction, and now I want to do it for my stories. I want to own voice for books which are written in my voice. I mean, it's kind of crazy, but I know how powerful voice is. Even just at Nink, when I said, you know, who listens to the podcast, it was probably 90% of the room who had come to see me speak, listen to the show. So hello, you guys, and thank you for coming. And thank you for joining me at Nink. And if, this is so fascinating to me, and I just have to see that this is part of the future. And again, we'll return to audio in a minute. But still on Wide. The other thing was Kobo's expansion into Walmart and audio. So Kobo's actually had a big week. Digital Book World was also on this week, and Michael Tamblyn unveiled the new Kobo Former device, and also talked about the integration with Walmart. And I share on the, if you go into Walmart, Americans go into Walmart, you're going to see audiobooks and ebooks being sold in store with these really interesting cards. So go and have a look at that. So digital gift cards next to audiobooks. So what they're doing is a kind of digital subscription with a card, which I think people are used to doing with gift cards. So I really like that idea. I think it's a very clever way of putting digital in a physical store. So lovely. I also had a great chat with a fantastic Christine Munro from Kobo Writing Life. Chrissy is super smart, and I think that's what I loved. I really love meeting the smart entrepreneurs who are, or intrapreneurs, those you know, people with that kind of can-do attitude within the companies that we work with. I'm so impressed with you guys, if any of you are listening. I'm so impressed. So I left pretty enthusiastic about the possibility of audio on Kobo, which also includes Walmart, obviously, and distribution to libraries through Overdrive, which is owned by Rakuten, who also own Kobo. And I only have one audiobook right now on Kobo, which is The Successful Author Mindset, but I am intending to get much more. So one of my to-do list items is an inventory of my audio, and to get my audio onto more Wide platforms. Also had, there was a great session by three authors representing Apple. So Diane Capri, Cheryl Bradshaw and Heather Sunseri did a great session on behalf of Apple, which has relaunched as Apple Books, and has now integrated audio with their in the same app, which I think is fantastic. So one of the tips they gave, well, of course, you have to update your branding. So those of us who have direct Apple links, you need to change out your icons. And they sent around an email about that. But also we talked about long pre-orders on Apple, making a big difference. And I've had one on Valley of Dry Bones for quite a long time. And also that free first in series still works very well on Apple, and how targeted ads on Apple can work well for free. So I thought that was really interesting. A lot of people say, oh, free doesn't work anymore, but those usually are people who are not wide. So there you go. So in conclusion, on the publishing wide thing, it is more exciting than ever before. There are more and more opportunities and new opportunities appearing. Several of the vendors I've mentioned have also said there are other things coming in 2019 that you're going to love. So I'm really excited about that. It does take time to grow an audience on different platforms and in different countries. But personally, I think it's well worth it to build a long-term business as an author that is not dependent on one platform. And just as an aside, there's a lot less drama, which is always a good thing. Number four, what if the future is audio first? Now, I think, you know, the things I've said so far are not necessarily that new in terms of what I think is coming. And I did mention this about Storytel the other week, but a lot of things came together while I was away that I've been thinking about. So whenever I travel on my own for conferences and self-development things rather than book research, I tend to kind of step back and try and look at where things are going. As I've mentioned many times now, coming up to my 10 years, I'm really kind of thinking, right, what is the next thing? How do I make sure that I still have a business going forwards? How can I zig when other people are zagging and all of that? So I also listen to a lot of podcasts. I pick up magazines, and I also look around at how people are behaving, especially in the US, because you guys are often ahead of the curve in terms of your behavior. So a few things came together for me in America. So first of all, the idea of an audio first future, that report on the new publishing standard, which is a must read blog if you're interested in wide and global, talked about the rise of Storytel. And I also talked to Findaway Voices about Storytel and how Sweden and some of these other markets are digital first and potentially audio first. And ebooks kind of arose in a market where streaming digital was still not fast enough. And so many of us have been like, oh, well, streaming digital just means that people are going to read ebooks. But actually, what if it is audio? And that's just to me, just thinking about this, it blows my mind. So audio continues to be the fastest growing segment in publishing, as reported by Publishers Association and tons of other people. And Podcast Insights report that 44% of the US population has listened to a podcast, and that podcast listeners are loyal, affluent and educated, and many of them are book buyers, including you guys. So that's interesting. So the rise of podcasting and the rise of audiobooks is one. The second thing is this growth of streaming internet into developing markets. So Singularity Hub reports that there will be 4 billion new minds online by 2025. Many of those people are mobile first and learning through streaming. So English is the global business language, and many people learn English through audio, through video, and there will be more demand for content in audio and digital. So to me, if you just think about how audio has grown because of smartphones and streaming, the ability to stream audio is what has changed this market. And if you think that that's going to be moving into these incredibly big mobile first markets, that's just fascinating. The other thing that got me, and I think this was a real switch because I did not understand this, was seeing how many people had Apple Watches with AirPods. So those little things in their ears that don't have a cable. So basically, I did not understand the Apple Watch. I was just like, why would you want that? I haven't worn a watch for 10 years, and I don't really want to wear a watch. But what I saw was how people were using their Apple Watches and the wearable life is different. So whereas I'm like, if I'm listening to a podcast and I'm walking along the street and with my cable to my phone, and then I hear someone talk about a book I want, I will stop and I'll type into my Things app the name of the author and the name of the book. So I'll go and look it up later. But what the way that people were talking, and also as I was writing this up, there was a report from Digital Book World, a tweet that I linked to in my notes that says, Kate Travers, so at Kate Travers, who's at Digital Book World, said, Andrew from Google Cloud just used voice technology to excerpt and buy a book, and chills were felt across the room. So basically, Google Cloud, Alexa, Audible, Google Home, Google Play, Apple Books, HomePod, Apple Watch, all of these things are moving to this voice-first technology. So I really suddenly kind of understood that if you're running along, listening to a podcast and someone's talking about something, or you're in your car, you can just speak to your watch and just say, download a sample of Joanna Penn's Successful Author Mindset, and you can get a sample, and then you can be like, buy the audiobook, and it will just buy the audiobook. So this is a voice first, hands-free way of consuming content. And also the rise of wearables becoming much more natural, the use of voice first amongst a younger generation. I'm just totally convinced. So now you can get audiobooks on your watch. You can be listening to this. You can be listening to content that you may well have read once upon a time. So that this is just fascinating to me. So obviously with the development of voice tech like Amazon Polly, which I've talked about before, and voice synth AI, which is happening through things like Baidu, which has been reported as a couple of years ahead of Western AI. Baidu is Chinese. In my mind, there is no doubt that voice synth AIs will take a share of the narrator market, and there'll be a split between AI read cheap audio. So you will just consume your maybe your morning newspaper will be a voice synth read AI. And then there'll be human powered premium audio where people will commit to voice on behalf of a person. So you can tell that this is me talking because I stumble a little bit. I'm probably repeating myself. I'm making it up on the fly. I'm not reading from a text, but it's fascinating to think how this will work with the kind of audio first consumption and production of content. And when I say content, I mean articles, books, all of this type of thing. Now, I'm definitely one of those people who I understand the medium of a book is different to the medium of voice, but a lot of people are listening to content. You guys listening to me now, I don't have a book on this content. This is new stuff. This is like a newscast as such in this way. I'm not going to put this into a book in this form. So you're listening in a different way for a different reason. But equally, I just think the way people are consuming is changing. My own personal consumption has changed, and the way I create has changed. You know, I've moved into dictation as well for my first draft. I know I was talking to my poet friend, Mark McGuinness, who's a fantastic creative coach, been on the show, 21st Century Creative Podcast, which is brilliant. Mark and I were talking about how poetry is changing in a kind of Instagram world and a voice world, and how things are different for creators. If you want people to buy your print book, then maybe you need to put yourself out there with your voice, and then they might buy it to preserve the experience. Or there's just so many ideas about this. The other thing, I had a chat with Will from Findaway Voices about quality, and quality in quotation marks, of narration, because both of us listen to audiobooks and podcasts at 1.5 speed. So maybe you listen to me at 1.5 speed, although I know I speak quite fast. But my husband, Jonathan, listens to a lot of long form fiction. Like, he'll only buy a fiction audiobook if it's over 50 hours. but then he listens to a lot of it, but he'll listen to it at normal speed because he enjoys the production value. Now, I see that, again, there's different types of of audio, some will be about getting it into your brain. So to me, it doesn't matter whether you're reading or listening. I believe both are, in quotation marks, reading, as in we're getting some information, inspiration, or entertainment into your brain in some form, into your neurons, into your experience of life. And that is quite a different way of consumption than the dramatic experience of an audiobook. And again, it's the difference between maybe watching TV and going to the theatre. There's like an experience aspect or there's a consumption aspect. So I don't know, I'm thinking a lot about how audio is going to change. I also mentioned that I have a friend who is blind, and he's, you know, incredibly productive in terms of his in his work, and he listens to all of his emails and everything, and he listens at a speed I can't understand. To me, it sounds like, you know, when things are speeded up so much, they just sound high pitched. The data goes into his brain faster than I can consume it. But if I'm on 1.5 now, how fast can I go to put things into my brain? Maybe that's nonfiction. Maybe it's not. I just don't think we can question how people consume. So you might be listening now and shaking your head. I bet you many of you are shaking your head and going, no, no, that'll never work. Well, you know, smell of paper. That's a good one. You know, this kind of, I just didn't really get this until I was in America, and the penny has super dropped for me on this. Okay, so I feel like we are at the beginning. It does feel like Jeff Bezos is day one in audio. And so, as I've mentioned before, I am doubling down on audio. I will be starting another podcast that I will be talking about. My aim is to launch my next podcast on the 10th anniversary of this podcast. So you're going to have to wait a few months to find out what it is. I will not be stopping this podcast. I know many of you might ask. I will be, obviously I'm stopping some things in order to make room for other things. Lovely question from Pete Blythe, who is a regular commenter. Thanks, Pete, and a supporter of the show. Pete said, just to point out that you said you're focusing on fiction. Is this audio thing something that's taking you away from writing fiction? And my point is that my focus on fiction in 2019, it's not just about writing fiction. Yes, I'm focusing on writing more fiction, but I'm also focusing on how do I build a sustainable business around fiction. And for me, that involves selling books and building a brand, not just writing. And as I mentioned up the front of this episode, I can't compete with speed. I'm never going to compete with speed. I'm pretty much a 3-book-a-year girl, so I'm pretty sure I will stick at that kind of level. 3 or 4, maybe, but I certainly couldn't do any more than that. So I can't compete on speed. I can compete on voice, because this is my voice. You can't compete with that. So I will be talking a lot more about this. But just to kind of round up on everything, we're at the end. You can breathe a sigh of relief. I am super positive about the future. I hope you can tell. I know I had a bit of a down note there on what's going on at the moment with KU, but I just feel like I can't be in that rat race. I literally can't be in that rat race. So I'm looking at the blue water over here and going, I can do that. That's where I can go. I want to write. I want to create, but I also love to have a good life and a good living, and I don't want to burn out. So for me, I'm looking at, okay, where do I want to be for the next 10 years? What do I want to do with my time? How do I want to create? And I want to create with my voice as well as on the page. I really feel that. So yes, I am super positive. I think the exciting things coming out of the wide vendors were fantastic, and I will talk more about this to come. I also think that perhaps my message is appreciated because I just won Publishing Commentator of the Year at Digital Book World 2018. So I guess that some of the things I say are going down well, or at least appreciated as commentary on the the publishing industry. So to me, that does feel like a bit of an industry pat on the back to say that, yes, what I'm talking about on this show actually is relevant for the industry as a whole, not just indie authors. So I hope this has been useful today. I know I don't do these solo shows too much, but that's because it's so much work. It's just super a load of work. But I hope it's been useful. And again, thank you to Nink, a fantastic conference. And yeah, I will be back next week. So I hope you enjoyed the solo show today, and I'd love to know what you think. So please leave a comment on the show notes with any thoughts. And that is episode 396 of the podcast. And of course, you can always find the show notes and all the links and everything at thecreativepen.com/podcast. And that's where you can always get the links and everything I talk about. There are show today has a lot of pictures as well. So if you want to see some pictures of Florida and people I hung out with and stuff like that, then go to the show notes there. Or you could tweet me at The Creative Pen, or you could email me, joanna@thecreativepen.com. I'd really like to know what you think, because these are some, I really feel like we're going through another shift right now. I feel like there is a shift in the market. Maybe I just feel that, I don't know. Often I'm early, so maybe there isn't a shift, but you never know. I'd love to know what you think and what your experience is wherever you are on the author journey. So next week I'll be talking to Beck Evans, who is the co-creator of Prolifico app, about habits of consistent writing and how you can learn about the ebbs and flows of your individual creativity. And of course, I've talked about in this solo show today about burnout and about the rapid release model and how, you probably can't write fast enough anymore. But what's interesting about this app is it's more about learning about your own habits. And I think that's fascinating. And Beck has interesting evidence and thoughts on this type of thing. And she also used to run a writing retreat. So we're going to be talking about all of that next week. So I will see you next week, and happy writing. I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes, available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.